Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
And I'm surrounded right now by loads of news talent. We're going to be talking about the news person's life on the streets, in the studio, and doing television news. Two real veterans of that trade are with me tonight. Both have been here in the past more than once, Dick Kaye and Mike Flannery. And a younger person, but by now rather well experienced, Lourdes Duarte, who's well known to any who watch television news at WGN Channel 9. These days, Dick Kaye is in retirement, but you were my president for so many years.
Yes.
You were the head of...
I was the head of the union.
Of AFTRA.
Right.
American Federation of Television and Radio.
I was a national officer, too. Second national vice president for a long time.
But you left NBC about 5 years ago.
5 years ago this month, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
However, as much of the town surely knows, you are doing a table-thumping political commentary program every Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, and it's freedom, Milt. I finally have a chance to do table thumping.
Yeah.
They hired me at 8:20 a.m. WCPT, and they've got three FM stations. But they hired me, and they said to me, I said, what do you want me to talk about? And they said, anything you want, including a good chili recipe, we don't care. And boy, that opened the floodgates.
You may collect the chili recipe. No,
I've never gotten to it.
Mike Flannery, of course, is well known in Chicago television. Was the political, covered politics with CBS, with Channel 2 for some 30 years. Also on the network now and again. And now is the political editor for Fox News Chicago.
Fox Chicago News, yes.
You made that switch over?
Last year.
Only last year.
At the end of June.
This is a kind of program which can often be introduced with the using and misusing of the classic Dickensian quotation from the opening of The Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Oh.
What, Lourdes, have been the best? We'll come to the worst later. What have been the best of times for you in terms of particular stories that you were chasing?
I would say stories where you get to make a difference. I'll tell you one story in particular where I really felt like I connected with the person that we were interviewing. When I was in Peoria, a rookie reporter, I got to follow a young man, 19 years old, needed a heart transplant. And we got to be with him in the operating room. We waited it out 8 months with him. And the day that Paige came in, that he had a heart donation. We were there with him, and we got to see what that experience was like for him and his family. Just a beautiful thing, and I was glad that I got to be a part of it. So I think that's the most memorable and maybe the best time for me.
A very heartening experience in at least a double sense. Well, I'll come to your worst of times later, but I want to hear from Flannery. You were about to tell us about a terrible misadventure down in Springfield, did you say?
In 1981, it's a live shot that still lives at Channel 2 on the gag reel. It was actually broadcast. It was a Saturday afternoon, and I was actually we were the only TV station down there at the time because I had decided to stay. Everybody else went home because there was going to be a big debate over the remap after the 1980 census. And sure enough, a fist fight broke out on the floor of the Illinois State Senate. Uh-huh. And then Republican Senator Mark Q. Rhodes from the western suburbs, he's now a lobbyist in D.C. and active in some stuff down there, he and Sam Vidalabhin, the late Sam Vidalabhin, state senator, they ended up trading blows and on the floor of the state senate in the middle of this very, very high-stakes remap battle. So great stuff, right? Great footage, and I'm prepared to be live. Unfortunately, after we got that footage, my camera operators, who shall go nameless, one of them has actually passed on to his eternal reward, decided to go out. I said, hey, we're all set. We come back in a couple hours, and they go out, and they decide to have a liquid lunch.
A liquid lunch.
And so for the 5 o'clock news, by the time they get to us from Chicago, my camera operator has actually passed out. And so the camera is drifting. So I'm sort of having to walk to stay in the uh-huh. I'm having to move to stay in the view. And they actually come to us several minutes early, and I was expecting the Senate president to be a guest, and He's not there. I'm looking around wondering where he is. And then they tell me that the tape machines have crashed in Chicago. So I'm filibustering with nowhere to go. And I'm trying to describe this tape that we don't have. And it was, in general, rather comical. It was, if you look at this with the right frame of mind, I've seen many people dissolve into belly.
Did anybody ever recover the tape of the two two senators
at the end of the show? At the end of the show, we finally get to this, and you know.
So the fisticuffs between the two senators, what was available after all?
Sam Vidalabine was about 5 feet and about 50 or older, and Rhodes was a young guy.
Yeah. Rhodes is in his 30s. Vidalabine was in his 60s.
Him. I mean, Vidalabine. They called him Battling Sammy Vidalabine.
Slamming Sammy Vidalabine. That's what I dubbed him. And he said, "You son of a boom." It was some good
TV. I'm here to collect your stories rather than to give you mine. But I can't resist giving you a quick story because yours reminds me of it. I started in radio not here, but at the University of Chicago, where they asked me to do a weekly thing called Conversations from Chicago. They sent it around on tape in the old days as a freebie to all sorts of stations. I did one or two of those, and then we were going to go in studio on campus. But then there was a well-known Republican congressman who was threatening to run for president, though he never did, who was in town, and he was holed up at the Ambassador East. And they asked me to go down there and talk with him for a full hour. There was an engineer, nice fellow, and he came along with me. And he set everything up, and we chatted and chatted. Had a rather good go-round. And then driving back, he said, "Boy, it's a good thing he didn't catch on." "To what?" "He said, the tape machine wasn't working." I said, "Why didn't you tell me?" That would have embarrassed you. He knew this from the opening. This beautiful one-hour conversation was lost forever.
I did the same thing. I didn't have a tape editor. I had an old beat-up. When I first started in radio in Peoria, I had a beat-up reel-to-reel tape. You know, the reels were about 2 inches wide. I mean diameter.
I remember.
My interview was with Wernher von Braun.
Goodness.
When they were getting ready to do the moonshot.
Really, yeah.
You know, he came to Bradley University, and I went in there, and I had attended Bradley, may have been attending Bradley, and I went in there and did the interview with Wernher von Braun, and there's not a bit of it left. It all rolled off the spool. I didn't
also
have any tape.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I suppose that happens in almost any broadcasting career.
Oh, yeah.
Lourdes, has that happened to you? A lost interview because the tape was messed up?
You know what? Actually, yesterday, I was using a viewer at the station. I put the disc in. This was on Friday. I go back yesterday to try to continue logging my story. I had left the disc in that viewer. At this point, about three other reporters had taken the viewer. I didn't know where the disc was. I looked for it for a good half hour or so. Luckily, somebody found it, so it all turned out well. But it happens quite often. You'd
yes,
be surprised.
It does
indeed. Yeah.
Guess what's going to happen right now? Something also that happens quite often.
Commercial.
You got a good way to introduce commercials? You got a new way to do it?
I don't. Coming up next, we'll be right back. Stick around. We got to pay the bills.
That will do.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
And I'm still in the Dickensian mood. And I think as we shift to Dick, hey, I'll ask you for both the best and the worst of time. The best and the
worst.
Well,
there have been so many bad and good.
You got to select one.
I
got to
tell you, one of my worst days, and it's not embarrassing, it was just one of the hardest days, was when Harold Washington died.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
It was a very difficult day because it had happened in the morning, and they sent us over with a live truck over to Northwestern Hospital. And you saw all of the people coming in. I was there with Peter Carl and Paul Hogan, the late Paul Hogan, and several other people. And you couldn't get any information. And I'm standing out in front of the hospital over in the emergency room over there, and you couldn't get any information. Nobody would stop and talk, and I'm live. And Harold's in the hospital, and we know, you know, something terrible has happened. And Jesse Jackson went in, and all of Harold's people went in, all of his chief of staff, Bill Ware, and all those people. You couldn't get a piece of information. And I couldn't confirm he was dead. And Peter Carl and Paul Hogan wanted to do the live shot. And I said, you know, I'm not giving you the live. This is my assignment, and I'm sticking to it. And eventually, the only guy that got confirmation was Peter Carl, got confirmation from a paramedic that had been there and reported that Harold was dead. And that was a very difficult day. I mean, to be standing out there unable to get any kind of information for an hour or two and talking to anybody you can talk with, and all these people are coming and going to the emergency room and you can't get anything. No. And the best of time, I guess the best of time, busiest time at least, was covering Harold Washington's administration.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you one quick story.
Harold was just such a wonderful character.
Harold and I got along well.
Yeah.
I mean, well, as far as I knew. I mean, he was wont to attack anybody if he felt like it, but Harold...
Well, you like to make it very hot for news people generally.
...said to me, he said, some reason or another, he said, why don't you come over to my house for breakfast? I'm like, what? And he said, why don't you come over? He said, I'd love to sit down and talk to me. He said, I'd like to have you over. We just sit and talk. And I said, I'd love to do that. And he said, well, why don't you come over this Sunday morning? And I went down to his Hyde Park condo or co-op down there.
Yep.
And I went in. I sat down. And he had a cook. And she cooked breakfast. And we spent a lovely, lovely morning. And had a great time. That was a very pleasant day. And I was on my way back to work, back to the merchandise mart, and I was driving and listening to the radio. And this guy who ran the so-called Martin Luther King Jr. Foundation here was on the radio, and they were reporting that Mayor Harold Washington was supposed to appear at the foundation event, but he was otherwise detained. He said he had other business.
Ah.
I said,
well, he was learning from you.
Business was having breakfast.
What was the name, do you remember, Mike, of the woman who was a congressperson from the Rockford area?
Lynn Martin.
Became
the labor secretary.
Later became secretary of labor. One of the best nights on this program ever was a Republican-Democrat debate, two members of Congress, Harold Washington and Lynn Martin.
Oh, wow.
Right,
you know,
here in this studio.
Oh, wow.
Had she been a Democrat and at the time when she entered politics in the Rockford area to run for the school board, she was a young mom. Her soon-to-be former husband, was an executive of the SunStrand company. And I'll tell you, had she chosen to be a Democrat, I think she would have been a governor. She would have won that Senate race.
Yep.
She probably would have beaten Paul Simon initially and then won that Senate race. But, you know, she had a personality that somehow grated on Republican voters.
Yes, she did. She's a very liberal Republican.
Yeah.
And very bright and rather good looking.
Well, perfectly she charming. Over at Kellogg School of Management.
Well,
when,
yeah.
After she left.
George H.W. Bush really, really admired her. He brought her in to be the stand-in for Geraldine Ferraro
when they were rehearsing in
84 for the VP debate rehearsal.
Exactly.
We've wandered into the realm of politicians we've known and admired and or disliked. Or found peculiar or eccentric or whatever. A gallery of politicians. Which ones stick in your memory, Lourdes?
Which one sticks in my memory?
They could just be locals.
Here's a good one. Kwame Kilpatrick, who was mayor of Detroit.
Yes, indeed.
I was in Detroit during the time that he was mayor, and it was always very interesting. He was very colorful in the way that he gave his press conferences. So you knew you went in there and you were going to laugh. He's the one that sticks in my head the most just because of his personality and, of course, because of everything that happened after I left with him going to jail and you know. Anyway, we could go on and on, but I'd say that's the one.
Well, there were two that I'll never forget, and who had an indefinable je ne sais quoi. Fidel Castro met him, spent 2.5 hours, followed George Ryan to Havana in 1999.
Oh, down, I see.
And we spent 2.5 hours in a lecture
hall at
the old Jesuit University, at the University of Havana, which had been founded by the Jesuits. It was a 250-year-old lecture hall, and at one point, I'm questioning him because he had freed four political prisoners for the visit of the Pope a few months earlier. A few weeks later, then he locked them all back up. And so I begin to ask, why has he done this? And he says, were you educated by the Jesuits? And I said, well, I went to Georgetown University. Yes, I was. And so then he launches into this theological. Were you there, Dick?
No, you remember what happened to me. They didn't send me, remember?
Right.
I was the only political guy that they didn't send because they wanted to send an anchor.
Well, he launched into this whole thing about, he had actually been in the seminary, I guess, at one point, in addition to having then later played baseball and having been signed to a minor league contract by the Pittsburgh Pirates. But the other one who was absolutely unforgettable... just to finish with Castro, at one point he really got upset. His eyes flashed, and there's that little guy about 4'10", who apparently was his chief bodyguard, reached under his jacket, and I got the sense, wow, you know, somebody. These are people who have killed people, right? You know, for not much. That doesn't take much. Then the other guy who was just unforgettable.
Well, hold it! He reached under his jacket. What happened when his hand came out?
Well, he didn't pull it out for a few seconds.
He was just
seconds.
Scratching himself.
No, he had a gun under there.
He really did.
He really did. Yeah. But there, I got a sense of Castro's arrogance and this is a guy who was used to having his word be law. And it was, you know, he was Moses descending from Sinai when he was used to having his voice be treated as though it were coming from a burning bush. The other one who was at the time, I didn't have the sense, but of course now he was such a world-changing figure. Ronald Reagan. Meeting Ronald Reagan on State Street under the clock at Marshall Fields and interviewing him for 10, 12 minutes.
He was president.
Before he was president, 1980.
What was he doing in town on that day?
Looking for delegates.
And he was campaigning. He was already the 1980s, nominee.
1980, as he would have been campaigning.
He was already the nominee. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And he just decided He had lived in Chicago as a young boy, and you know he actually lived down not too far from your University of Chicago campus. The home is only they live just west of the University of Chicago.
I didn't know that.
It's actually now a few blocks from Operation Push.
Really?
And Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Push headquarters at 50th and Drexel. Mm-hmm. It's a couple blocks from there.
Well, I've met several, but just a quick story on the Cuban trip. They sent every political reporter in town except Channel 5, and they didn't send me. They wanted to send an anchor who will remain nameless, okay? And I was really angry because all my colleagues, all my competitors were going to Cuba with George Ryan, and they wouldn't send me. And what happened is these guys were down there, and they went the entire trip until the last day and never met Castro. And George Ryan went out to that university because Ryan was giving a speech, and Castro showed up. My anchor didn't go. They went shopping, and they missed Castro.
I remember that. Yeah, your anchor didn't go. Ran out of tape.
Still in town?
I think still in town.
I don't think he's in town now. I think he lives in another locale. He comes back. He has a place here.
So, Mike, you realize that I'm Cuban, and you're the one who gets to meet Fidel Castro. Interesting, huh?
One of my greatest.
And then we met Raul on the second trip.
There you go.
The next trip with Ryan, 18 months later, we met Raul Castro.
Well, have you been down there?
I have never been to Cuba, actually. My parents were born there. I was born here in Chicago. But, they came as teenagers.
One of my great experiences, I went to Israel with Jane Byrne when she went to Israel. Mm. And I don't know, maybe I should, are you about to take a break? Let me hold
you
on.
You caught on. Yeah. You see me shifting and looking at the clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're coming up for, indeed, a newscast. And then directly back to this fine panel, Dick Kay, Lourdes Duarte, Mike Flannery, as we just shoot the bull, so to speak, talking about their adventures in the talk trade, in the news trade. And we'll commence and rather continue with all of that right after the update on the news and to the WGN newsroom and Paula Cooper.
Milt Rosenberg and Extension 720 on 720 WGN.
And directly back to this fine cast, Dick Kay, Mike Flannery, Lourdes Duarte. And
all
Dick
right,
Kay,
I got the six-pack. You wanted some wine, I think, right? And during the break, I brought the six-pack for the rest of us here.
Tequila.
Dick
Mike
was about to tell us his Israel
story.
Well,
we went to Israel with Jane Byrne, and I was the only reporter from Chicago that went to Israel with him. Mm-hmm. And one of the great experiences of my career, and I have a photograph at home on my wall, one of the places we went with Jane Byrne was to Menachem Begin's house. And he had a reception for us, and we went in, and there were several mayors, and I got to meet Menachem Begin and talk to him, and they had an AP photographer there who took a photograph of myself and Menachem Begin. But the other side to Jane Byrne's story is Israel has a president, and they have what amounts to a White House. They're not the head such as the prime minister, but the president at the time was Yitzhak mm-hmm. Navon.
Mm-hmm.
And he hosted a reception for the mayors. This was a mayor's event and a mayor's meeting. And he hosted a reception. And we go in with camera crews. And he sat at the head of the table. And we were around the table. The mayors were. And we were by their side. And he was very blunt to the mayors about Israel's problem and the need for secrecy and everything. And they said, okay, we're going to take a break and, step out into the lobby and have a little orange juice, really. That's what it was. And we go out there. They got all the mayors lined up. And as I'm walking out to the lobby by myself and the cameraman, Byrne and her entourage, including Jay McMullen and
her husband,
yeah. And the bodyguards are walking out the door. This is an intermission. I thought, well, she's going to go take a smoke. I said, where are you going? And Mike Graney was one of the bodyguards. He said, home. I said, oh, you mean back to the hotel? He said, no, home. I said, what do you mean home? He said, she doesn't like it here. We're going back to Chicago. And this is now, I'm standing there, and they're looking all around, and they've got all the mayors lined up for this picture in front of this beautiful mosaic, and they're looking for Byrne. Where's Mayor Byrne? I said, she left. I had to tell the president of Israel, Mayor Byrne left. And they did. They went back down to Tel Aviv. We're in Jerusalem. They went back down to Tel Aviv, and they got on a plane and flew home.
I have two great home visit stories.
One other. Harold Washington went to Israel, and I went with him. And we get to Israel, and we had spent a great time with Harold. And he was a very personable guy. And it was the day he went from Israel to Rome, and we went with him. Boy, that was a great trip, I tell you. It's one of the beauties of NBC. And we got to Rome, and it's the night, it's actually the day here, and the night in Rome, that Jane Byrne is going to announce that she's going to run again. And she's standing by some lock gate with a rusty fence around it. And I said to Mayor Washington, how about going live with me from Rome?
Yeah.
And he said, I'd love to, but I don't want to be on the same show with her. I'll do another show like the 5 o'clock, 4:30. I said, okay. Now, over there, the 5 o'clock news is, it's 8 hours different, so it's past midnight. I mean, I don't know, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. right? Well, the first thing that happened is we had a producer, and she decided that she would send a limousine to Harold's function and bring him back over. She knew better because she's from Rome. She sent a stretched limousine, and they could barely get through the narrow streets in Rome. And the second thing is, I thought I was going to kill Harold. We had an RAI camera crew, and we were up on top on the roof of the RAI studios, and the only way to get up the roof is to go up a rickety inside fire escape and through a trap door on the roof. And we had to use cameraman's lights, Fresi lights, and Harold is huffing and puffing and huffing. And
he had a lot of Harold to carry up that
man,
fire.
I thought, oh, no, they're going to blame me. Huh. But he did. He came all the way up to the roof and did the interview.
Lourdes, these two vets are full of stories about their adventures with the eminent and the despicable.
I know. I've fallen way, way behind.
You
I
didn't
need to
have
try
that
to keep
conference
up here.
With Fidel Castro. What's the closest you came to that sort of thing?
I don't know. I'm really going to have to think about
this. It's the eminentos and contacts with the eminentos.
Let's see. I'm really...
Well, you've been on the political beat here in Chicago.
Well, normally I don't do the political beat. I think that's probably part of it. Uh-huh. Normally I'm a crime reporter. I mean, I'm out on the street, so, death, fires, that's normally what I cover. I cover politics every now and then, but mostly
who's the most eminent murderer
reporter
you've ever had anything to do with?
I can't think right now of who I would put on that list.
In Peoria?
In Peoria. You know, I'll tell you who I met that was a story that I'll never forget. Matt Hale, white supremacist. Oh,
yeah. I remember who he was, yes.
We were talking about home stories, did get to go to his home, yeah. And I was panicking as I was walking in. But while I was in Peoria, this is a very interesting story.
He's an American Nazi type.
White supremacist, not? Yeah.
White supremacist,
based
yeah.
out of Peoria, East Peoria, mm-hmm. actually, has a huge following. But
celebrates the birthday of Adolf Hitler.
Yes, he yeah. does. Yes, he does. He was having a like a press conference, a meeting with his followers at the Peoria Public Library. It was on a weekend, and I worked weekends like any good reporter would. And so one of our interns had said, hey, at my college at Bradley, they're saying that a number of students are going to show up at the library to protest his appearance there.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, all right, let's go check it out. Let's go and see what's happening. We get there. Sure enough, there's about 100 students, rallying and upset. And as Matt Hale and his followers go inside the library, which was in the basement, no windows, they follow along with him. And as he starts to talk, they get up. About 50 people start throwing chairs around. There's a huge brawl, people spraying pepper spray. And it's me and my photographer. We were the only ones there because nobody else thought to cover it. So we sort of hide off in a corner and were able to capture all this amazing video of just a huge brawl in the middle of this library where, as I said, there's no windows. There's no way to get out until police arrive there and we were able to get out safely. But that was, I'd say that was one that was a little scary.
Mike Flannery, how did that story play through? Hale, I know, wound up in prison because mm-hmm. one of his followers did some murders. Do I remember that correctly?
Well, yeah. They threatened the judge, didn't they? Didn't they?
Well, I think that's the man correct. Who killed Ricky Birdsong in Evanston.
Yeah,
wasn't he an acolyte of
yes,
Mr.
He was.
And there was another shooting in Indiana. Remember?
Yeah. And then they threatened.
But I think eventually he went to jail because they threatened a judge.
They
that
threatened
was why
the judge,
they put
yeah.
him
right.
in jail eventually. Yeah.
Right. Hale went to prison for threatening
yes,
the judge.
Yes, he did.
Being
mm-hmm.
involved in
being
the threat
involved in
against the,
threat. The
judge.
Right.
I think posting some personal information.
A federal judge, too.
Yeah, and it came after the Lefko.
I thought it was before the Lefko.
Was it before the Lefko?
Is he still in jail?
That's a good question.
Yeah, he's still in prison. He got a long sentence. But
couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Yeah, no kidding.
To a more deserving guy.
To a more deserving guy, yeah.
So there's my story. Hopefully, maybe does that balance out here? I don't know.
But you know, as we're talking,
it was
about,
scary. I'll tell you what.
About contacts with either political types or aspiring political types like Matt Hale. It is time after we pause for a brief entrepreneurial module or two. It's time to talk about Chicago.
I love your euphemisms for
that's
these
one of my
commercial
favorites.
Breaks.
But it's time simply to talk about actually the era that is ending virtually this day. And what's coming. And all of that we shall address after we pause for these words.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
And directly back to this fine panel of television news reporters. Dick Kay, former reporter and political editor at NBC5, now host of the Back on the Beat program, airing on Saturdays from 1 to 4 p.m. at WCPT Radio. WCPT stands for, CPT stands for Chicago
Progressive
Talk. And when you asked me where should you sit, I said right here to the left of me, which makes perfectly appropriate sense.
Because I am to the left of you.
You are, rather, yes. Mike Flannery is the political editor at Fox News here in Chicago, and he covered politics with CBS, that is at Channel 2, for some 30 years. Lourdes Duarte is co-anchor of the WGN Evening News on weekdays, or rather weeknights, from 5 to 6 p.m. Also the host of Adelante Chicago. That's a bi-weekly program on Saturdays from 6:30 to 7 a.m. You got to get up early for that one.
We tape it.
Of course.
Shh, don't tell anyone.
I should have known that.
Of course you do.
You also serve as the general assignment reporter for WGN News. That means you're out on the street.
That's right. I'm out on the street. Yeah. Whereas these gentlemen get to cover a lot more politics. I usually cover everyday stuff day in, day out. So
you were out on the street this very night, weren't you?
I was.
Well, so we
actually
were told.
Did a story on Daly tonight.
What did you
his
do?
Last
Tell
day,
us.
His last council meeting today. I got to put that story together.
Were you at the meeting then?
I was not at the meeting. Mm-hmm. Somebody else covered it in the morning, and then I had the job of putting it together for tonight's newscast
uh-huh.
at 9 o'clock.
Well,
but I did listen through, some of the comments made by the aldermen. All very nice, as you can all imagine.
Have you two guys checked that as well?
Yeah, I was there.
You were at the. You were at the
session. It was about 90 minutes of hagiographic
of encomiums
from the. from
I've
the
never
alderman.
Had the opportunity to use the word encomium. But these were encomium.
There you go. There's always a first.
This show has the biggest vocabulary in American broadcasting, Mel, thanks to you. But there were very few multi-syllabic words used for the most part from the aldermen.
They were talking Chicago. Chicago.
But, you know, it is an amazing thing to reflect on the fact that for 43 of the last 56 years, mm-hmm. the mayor of Chicago has been Richard Daley.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, I had the chance.
Did Junior exceed the total run of his father?
Yes.
Yes,
he served more time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
By a few months.
Christmas week, he surpassed his father's record.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, 21 and a half years for his dad, 22 years for the son. It's actually 43 and a half for the last 56 years. And it's an astounding, I don't think there's anywhere in the country that comes close to it. That one family, you know, because you got to reflect on, you got to include the fact that his, the mayor's brother, Johnny Daley, is the chairman of the finance committee at the Cook County Board and really runs the county board in many ways. And another brother, Michael, has been a lawyer in town.
The zoning king.
But, of course, brother William, Billy, is the chief of staff at the White House, having served Bill Clinton as commerce secretary. You know, the family has had an extraordinary extraordinary
role. You know,
in
I can't
American
resist
politics.
Raising the question. I've had an hypothesis, but I've never had it confirmed. Why did Richie Daley retire when he did? What did Barack Obama and others have to do with moving him out? Did they have anything to do with it? Was there any pressure put to make room for Rahm Emanuel, or do I have it all wrong?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't cover it on a daily
basis.
Have
you heard that hypothesized?
I've heard it, but I don't believe it. Mm-hmm. I believe that it was an opportunity. I believe Richie made up his mind not to run again.
He said at the news conference. He held a long freewheeling news conference after this long freewheeling council meeting today. And he repeated that he made his mind up in July.
Yeah.
So I am absolutely convinced that they lagged that information to Rahm. And Rahm got a head start that many others did not have. And so when the announcement came, Rahm was far better positioned than, say, Tom Dart.
And had already made his intentions known on Charlie Rose's show.
Yeah, and then I think there was also, you know, there was an arrangement that, Bill Daley, the mayor's brother, was going to move into that slot. I mean, you know, how much of this was actually all laid out? I think there was some sort of discussion of it ahead of time. But I don't I think the mayor decided.
You don't think his reason was to be, he didn't allow them to push him out.
No.
He just didn't want to do it anymore.
I think there's several things at play here. I think, first of all, life is not going to be as sweet as it has been in that mayor's job any longer, because the city is in major financial trouble. The mayor's popularity ratings were way down. If you looked at them, I believe it was the Tribune just did a chart and showed that the mayor's popularity rating was down to about 39%. There someone could have mounted a credible challenge. I don't know who it would have been. But I think Daley said, this is not worth it. My wife is ill. I want to spend some quality time away from this job, away from this office. I don't think it's because Maggie was ill, but I think that was a factor. And I think he said, I've done all I can do for this city. I'm just tired. I think he really meant it. It's time.
I would have to agree with you as well, because I think, while I don't want to be naive, and there were probably a number of political reasons, I do think that eventually when you've been doing it for 21, 22 years, I mean, you get tired and you want to call it a day. And if your wife is sick, you want to spend time with them and maybe travel and spend time with your family. And it just gets to the point where you just say, enough is enough. I've done all I can, and I'd rather go out on top than see things sort of fall apart, you know, right before me. And that was it.
I think Richie Daley, Bill Daley, I think that was an opportunity for Obama. When Daley decided he wasn't going to run, Rahm knew he was. And I think that Obama at that point needed a Wall Street person, a business person in the White House, and Bill Daley was a natural. He could trust him. I mean, he had great relationship with Mayor Daley and with Bill Daley. And Bill Daley was the perfect fit for chief of staff at that time. And as you know, I mean, Obama was having a lot of problems in the financial sector. And Bill Daley has been an entree, I think, to President Obama in that role. And I think it was perfect timing. Mm-hmm.
The president of Cook County is a former student of mine. But
really?
The new mayor, yeah, when I first arrived at the University of Chicago in 1965, she was an undergraduate in a course, a little seminar course that I taught. And not that I've had any further influence upon her. I'm not making any claims.
But did you remember her from the course?
Oh, yes.
I mean,
well,
you remember.
Sure, she remembers me. We've chatted a few
was
times.
She any more pleasant than she is today?
Well, she's been a breath of fresh air over there in terms of what she's done.
I think she's a pleasant woman.
In terms of the policy
standards.
The budget cuts.
I think you're right. I think she's
the sales tax repeal, I like
great.
That.
Yeah. I think she's But I don't think, I think she's, her temperament leaves a lot to be desired.
But I mention that simply because I was going to lead to say that, but I've never even met Rahm Emanuel, and I don't know what he's like, except I have an impression from a distance, because I've read a lot of stories about how foul-mouthed he was in Washington, though he's obviously been on better behavior here. All of that is prefaced by simply asking you three experienced political reporters, what do you expect? What's coming? Lourdes.
I think for the people at home, things are going to go on the way they have. I think Daley and Rahm Emanuel have a lot in common when it comes to ideas. I think at home, people aren't really going to see much difference, at least not, I think, within the first 6 months. I think us as reporters, I think we will see a difference in the way that press conferences are carried out. I mean, we're used to Daley being, even though he has a script and he does follow it, and I'm sure he has an idea of what he wants to say, he's pretty, you know, loose, and he's pretty off the cuff, and he just talks.
But will we see any difference the way in which press conferences will be will operate in a different fashion, you're saying? I'm sure that's true. But will we see any difference in how the city is run?
Yes, absolutely.
Most particularly, will we see some
Do you think right off the bat at the first two, 3 months?
We can't afford the government. We have, Milt, and and I have talked to some of the business community and labor leader people that have been in conversations with Emanuel. This guy is focused like a laser beam on the fundamentals. He knows that there are three things he's focused on, and you know he's put the new school board chief in place. He's got the new police chief in place, and he is now turning his attention, and he has people from all over the country giving him ideas about how to balance this budget. This city is going to have to stop doing some things that it's done for a long time.
I got a very basic question with regard to balancing the budget and finally making the city fiscally responsible. What is he going to do about the high level of corruption which has distinguished the operation of the city of Chicago under both Daley's and under all the other mayors over the last 50, 60, or 70, or has it been over the last 150 years?
Patronage is going to stop because it has to, but he's put in place this former Inspector General gal, if I'm trying to think of her name right now, Sue Choi, right?
Oh, yeah.
She is coming in out of, so that sort of stuff that was laid out in the Sorich trial and in other investigations, I think that is over. But the confrontations that are coming with labor unions from Local 1001, I know some of Dick's friends in the union community. I mean, Lou Phillips over at 1001 is girding his loins for battle. Karen Lewis at the teachers union is girding her loins for battle.
This will be a variant of the battle that they had in Madison, Wisconsin in recent times.
No, not that. I don't think it will reach
It won't go down quite like that, but the same forces will be contending.
That's what I mean.
It is these, and we see that. The same battle is going to be taking place in Springfield. We see these labor unions, the public employee labor unions, who really have a pretty sweet deal, are trying to protect that sweet deal. And taxpayers who are under more financial pressure, you know, the kids have come back home because they come out of college and they can't get a job. Mom or dad has lost his or her job. The pay's been cut by 20, 30, 40%. It's a tough season. And so, the labor negotiations, Rahm is preparing for those. His people are preparing for those. They're going to seek concessions layoffs right up front. And they have no alternative because there's no money.
I think Rahm wants to get rid of the patronage monitor that is in City Hall today, even as we speak, has been there. And is costing the city millions, who still reports that there have been very few changes in the mentality or the culture at City Hall, that there's still people trying to bypass the new hiring rules. I think Michael Shackman himself has praised Rahm Emanuel for his efforts toward ending that corruption in the hiring. But I also think the reporters here I'm not on the street anymore, but I think Rahm Emanuel is a very buttoned-up guy. He's going to have confrontation with reporters also. Going to be very tight, no matter what he talks about transparency. Going to be very tight. He's already cut out Marianne Ahern because he didn't like a report she did on the fundraiser for his inaugural. He cut her out of her one-on-one interview.
Yeah, but all
he's
that stuff.
Be very
I gotta
buttoned
say, Dick,
up.
I think in terms of news your listeners can use, there's a 90% property tax increase coming in 2015 just because of the public employee pensions, Milt, unless we get those costs under control.
I ain't going to pay it.
Well,
and millions of others won't either.
You're quite right. He's going to try.
I mean, forget about news conferences and reporters.
Yeah, I'm not talking
this is
about
the stuff.
I think that's
this
important.
Is the stuff that people care
no,
about.
No, and I agree with you, and I think those things are going to come. Do I think they're going to be instantly and we're going to see them the first month?
Well,
no. I mean, I think we've got so many problems that it's going to be over the course of the
next
year.
There will be a good
year.
Deal then that will keep the TV reporters and other reporters quite busy.
Yes, they will.
I am about to pause for the obvious reasons. We're going to do a newscast in just a moment. But I'm very curious, and this is my rather crude segue to the next topic. I want to hear a little bit about the TV news business. And how it functions these days and how it's changed and whether, in fact, you approve of it. We'll be directly back to Dick Kaye and Mike Flannery and Lourdes Duarte after the full update on the evening's news from Paula Cooper.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
Are we taking telephone calls tonight? Of course we are. It's a two-hour program, and we're opening the lines right now, but we won't get to the phones for about 15 minutes, I predict. But the lines are now open, and the number, as ever, is 312-591-7200, 312-591-7200. And for our Internet listeners at great distance, if you want to get to us via email, of course, that is a welcome alternative. And the email address, extension720@wgnradio.com. extension720@wgnradio.com. Or for calls, again, 312-591-7200. If you don't mind getting in line and waiting just a bit, get in there right now. We'll be with you shortly. But I do want to talk about the biz itself that you're all involved in. And I offer you here, for your delectation, three quotations. And then I want you to respond to them. You can choose any one to comment on. Dave Barry says, I would not know how I'm supposed to feel about many stories if not for the fact that the TV news personalities make sad faces for sad stories and happy faces for happy stories. David Brinkley, the great David Brinkley, said, the one function that TV news performs very well is that when there is no news, we give it to you with the same emphasis as if there were. From an earlier period, Eric Severide, a great figure in CBS News back in the Morrow days, right, said, dealing with network executives is like being nibbled to death by ducks. Lourdes, which one of those would you choose to elaborate
on? I do appreciate the happy face or the sad face quote.
Do you? You're mostly happy face
you know
on
what?
The air.
I try to be happy face, and unfortunately, a lot of the news that we report on is sad. I wish I had the happy face a lot more often.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty funny. You know what? They're right. We do fall into that sort of rut where it's happy news, so you should smile. Sad news, so you should maybe frown or look a certain way. It's funny.
Well, you know, when Rahm Emanuel stepped down last fall to come to Chicago to run for mayor for about 10 or 12 minutes, I got beckoned into the Oval Office. And it turns out that the president sits around wondering whither journalism, as I'm sure many politicians do, because that's an important part of their business and how they communicate with the out there with the voting public. You know, I think it's the best of times and the worst of times, as you said at the top of the show an hour ago, Milt, because there, in terms of avenues of communication and access to information, the public has never had the news. Consumer has never had more options. The internet is an astounding conduit. The problem with it is, and what makes it potentially the worst of times in some ways, is there's a lot of junk out there. I do believe that accuracy and real reporting will eventually be something people are willing to pay for. The junk that's out there, the aggregators who rip off the real journalists out there are eventually going to fade away, I think. And why is that? Because I believe with Abraham Lincoln, as long as we're throwing quotes out, You can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time. And I think, actually, the news consumer out there is a pretty smart cookie.
Is it true that the news consumer is also a rather old cookie? That young people don't really watch television news?
I don't think so at
all.
They don't watch TV news.
They don't watch
TV news. They don't read the newspaper. But they're consuming news. They're getting it through Twitter. Did you see those stories the other day? When the information came out, when the news was released about the killing of bin Laden on Sunday night, Twitter set an astounding volume record. It just shattered. And it's amazing to look at. There's a graph, and it's on the internet. You can go, your listeners can Google it. But there is an astounding graph of the volume on Twitter. And then they asked people, there was a survey done the next day or the next couple of days, a survey done, how did you get the information about bin Laden's killing? And of those 18 to 34, there was a huge disparity. I think 56% or 60% of the whole country saw it on TV. But among those from 18 to 34 who got it through the social media, Facebook, Twitter.
Or their iPhones.
Well,
or,
huge number. First of all, I did it from 1960 until 2006. I wouldn't do it again. I mean, I might if I were younger and hadn't been witness to all the things I've been witness to. I think there are far more resources available. Mm-hmm. I think that Twitter, the social media, Facebook, you name it, MySpace, YouTube, you can find anything on YouTube. But I also think that the Internet is unreliable. I don't trust the Internet unless I know the source, unless I know, for example, the Huffington
Dick,
Post.
But everything now, on there is true.
Don't trust it.
I saw Barack Obama's birth certificate from Mombasa, Kenya on the internet.
Yeah, right. Right. You did. I saw that, too, from Mombasa. Now they've spread the word that that's fake, that the one he displayed is fake. I mean, I think that the Internet, it has too many, I mean, too many people have access. I hate, as a reporter, I hate this. Except for sometimes the video, the so-called eye reports. If you got a cell phone, you can be a reporter. Mm-hmm. I hate it. It's unreliable. You don't know who you're dealing with. You don't know who's blogging. You don't know their name.
But on the other hand,
they are anonymous sources.
On the other hand, this past weekend, there was the fella, the shopkeeper in Abbottabad, Pakistan, an upscale, very anglicized, apparently English-speaking town, tweeting the raid.
But he didn't know it was the raid,
right,
and that's
but
my
he's
point.
Tweeting the raid on bin Laden's place, the helicopter crash.
But
he had it all
right. It was the raid. He didn't know. He thought maybe it was the military. He thought it was a military helicopter. He heard the helicopters. He heard the explosion. But he didn't know what he had. And he said, if I had known what I had, I might not have done it so soon. And that's my problem. You don't know who these people are. And the other thing is, these folks, I respect them. I respect Mike's work. I always have. And Lourdes. But the television stations have cut resources. There's this new thing in town about sharing videotape. They now have a bureau where three stations or four stations all use the same videotape. There's no enterprise in that. It's a camera crew assigned to that story, and they pass it around. One station refused to do it, and that's Channel 7. Emily Barr said, I'd rather have a cameraman because that's the second set of eyes with my reporter. Because I asked her about it. Why don't you do it? And I said, I'm glad you don't. But the resources have been chopped. And I got to tell you, I don't know, Mike, I'm not in your shop and Lord is your shop. But the assignment desk is the newspaper. Mm-hmm. The assignment editor, the assignment rundown is the morning paper.
I do want to bring up two points about young people not watching news or not listening to news or not getting news. I do think these social network sites like the Twitters and the Facebook do get younger people more interested in news because they're seeing, you know, these tweets. And so that raises a red flag and tells them, you know, well, I should read about that story. I should know what's going on. And so I think for the younger generation, it does get them a little bit more involved.
And
they feel like it has... They have a say.
They come to watch TV because of what they've seen on Twitter.
Yeah,
but TV
yeah.
doesn't always have the story of what they've seen on Twitter. That's my point. Television resources have been cut back.
To the resource point that you brought up, I mean, we're in our newsroom, we're using Twitter very much as a resource, because whereas before we relied on people calling in with tips or a press release that was sent in or scanners, this is one more form, one more avenue that we get to explore and get
tips.
A tip. I mean, from there, you can't go with that and say, this is the truth and we're going to report it. But it does give you, hey, we should be looking at this and we should be making calls on this. So it's just one more form where we can get information.
But I used to go, and Mike went to Cuba. I went to Italy. I went to Israel. I went to Texas. I went to every state in the union almost on news
stories.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen anymore.
And that doesn't happen anymore. And if they get outside the loop here in Chicago, you're lucky.
Well, I'm going to Springfield in the morning.
Well, Springfield.
Tomorrow the General Assembly is going to vote.
Springfield when I
tomorrow the General Assembly is scheduled to vote on the concealed carry handgun and medical marijuana.
You will not be surprised to learn that our lines are filled and people are eager to talk with you. And therefore, we will go directly to the phones after we first pause for a brief round of commercial messages. Now I see one line has become available again. Therefore, 312-591-7200 is the number if you want to grab for that line. If you hit the busy signal, don't be totally discouraged, but of course, try again right after we say goodnight to a prior caller. And after a few commercials, we'll be on to the first soon-to-be prior caller.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
Quick reintroduction of our guests and right on to the phones. Those guests are Lourdes Duarte, a co-anchor of the WGN Evening News, Mike Flannery, political editor at Fox News, Dick Kaye, who after a long and distinguished career at NBC Channel 5, now does the Back on the Beat program airing on Saturdays 1 to 4 p.m. at WCPT Radio. 312-591-7200 is our number. And first up is Ken, who has reached us at WGN Radio. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. This question is for anyone in the panel. Mike Flannery touched on a certain news article that really drives me kind of nuts, but can anyone answer me, how do the major networks gather their news from the federal government when a big story breaks? Can anyone answer that question? And I got another part to that question.
Well, we'll clarify your question just a bit. What exactly do you mean, or what are you wondering about?
Well, Diane Sawyer reported that this was a dead or alive news break, came into on the station, and it wasn't a dead or alive mission at all by the SEALs. And then 2 hours later, the Lear report said that Leon Panetta said this was not a take them alive. We're going to take them dead. There's just such a big gap.
Yeah, in this case. In this case, sir, I think when something like this breaks, nobody had a reporter on the ground in Abbottabad. And so initially, for those first few hours, until the next morning when a few American reporters did get up there, we were entirely at the mercy of the White House and the national security agencies.
Well, I happened to watch, for example, ABC that night, and they had a two-hour, they were on for 2 hours. They had Stephanopoulos, who obviously has contacts in Washington, having served in the White House. They had Cuomo.
But I guess,
they
Dick, had, at this point, though, the only information was coming from the SEALs.
Well, I tell you what ABC did, and I was really happy I saw it. These guys called in all of their people who cover those specific departments, and they were all reaching out to their contacts. And you're right. It was reported at first that that was a kill mission, and then the White House backed off and said it's not a kill mission. The story is still changing today, but the media was out front, and even before the president made the announcement, ABC was all over it and had all of their experts in. And they had Martha Raddatz, who was getting on a plane to go to Afghanistan and got off. And they had Mike Boettcher, who was calling from Afghanistan. And they all reached out to their sources. But a lot of folks that night didn't do that. They didn't get up to speed that night. And to be honest with you, on big stories, you're at the mercy of the expertise in your own department, or you have to go through the info folks in the government departments.
Our thanks to the caller, and he will forgive me for not waiting for a second question, but loads of people are lined up, and let's get to the next one. The next one is Mike, who's reached us at WGN Radio. Good evening.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, there seems to be a lot of whining from the news people here. The reason people are turning away from the traditional news sources is because you've lost your integrity. You've all become, whether you're on the left or the right, you've all become, you know, cheerleading sycophants for your own team.
And all right, all right, all right, all right. Give us an example. Before you continue your whining, let's get to specifics.
Okay, here's the specifics. In Good. Chicago, nobody, with the exception of Tim Novak, has taken on City Hall on contract fraud. I mean, everybody just goes along and the party line. I mean, nobody except for Frank Maine and Tim Novak and Carol Marine have gone after City Hall on the David Kochman killing.
Well, that's their story.
Well, nobody.
The David Kochman killing. Well, wait a minute. Has anybody found anything wrong in that investigation?
I think the cover up is wrong, isn't it?
Okay. I direct you to the My Fox Chicago website. My colleague Dane Placco has built a several year portfolio of stories about the Todd Strozier administration.
Oh, yeah.
wrongdoing at Cook County. You know, so before you whine and moan and groan yourself, I'd advise you to get smart. It sounds
everybody will pick on Strozier, and now that Blago's out, you'll pick on Blago, but nobody goes after the King daily.
Oh, I disagree with you.
Oh, come on.
I disagree with you.
Oh, First of all,
I don't work for anybody anymore except myself. I have a radio show. I'm a freelancer and have freedom to talk about anything I want. So I'm not a cheerleader or sycophant for anyone. And I talk about, I have a liberal radio show, and I am now no longer have to be objective because now I'm a talk show host on a liberal radio station, and that's my mission. So I do express my opinion, but I didn't do that when I was at Channel 5.
Well, yeah, and let me guess, sir, you're one of these guys who you don't watch, right?
I think we've lost the caller.
No, he's there. You don't watch, right?
We have lost him now. Because
well, I'm sure he doesn't watch because of his ignorance, ignorant remarks. Next caller.
There are, of course, also various news media. When it comes to corruption, even in the current now-ending administration, we've surely had a fair amount of digging by various news.
I think also, and if I could just make this point real quick, I think sometimes people call in and say, you should be looking into this or you should be doing this. But when you're talking about TV news, I've got to put somebody on TV saying, this is what's wrong. Or I have to have some sort of source or somebody to explain, hey, this is what happened. When people don't want to talk and don't want to speak out, it does make it a little bit more difficult to tell the story.
I was about to point to the fact that we've got a range of media, and the most old-fashioned of all media, namely print newspapers in this town, both of the major papers, have done a great deal in hacking through the persiflage and showing up corruption
and
in the city government.
The praise the last caller offered for Tim Novak, for Frank Maine, I'd throw Abdon Polish in there.
Abdon Polish.
The Chicago Tribune has had an extraordinary run of investigative stories.
And the Sun-Times has done
very
well.
Those guys are from the Sun-Times, that we mentioned, mentioned.
You talk about good reporting. Sun-Times just won reporting on crime in Chicago, just won the Pulitzer Prize.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about Mayor Daley.
It's interesting to note that the Sun-Times has been working on with rather meager resources. And has managed to render very valuable investigative journalistic service.
Absolutely. Those guys have been great. And the Kochman story in particular is one that the caller cited. The work that they did there was worthy work. In the end, a series of law enforcement agencies have either declined to look at it or have looked at it and found nothing wrong.
Well, except the Inspector General, as Ferguson, is still taking a look at it. But my problem, I'm sort of like you, Mike. I think the goal of that one is to get somebody charged. I mean, I you can look at it and say that's a bit transparent because they won't let it go. And maybe they shouldn't. Maybe they're right. Maybe I'm not going to criticize the reporting because they did a good job. The other thing is, and it's back to my earlier point, television today used to be able to do long investigative reports. We had Unit 5. We always had an investigative unit.
You know what? Tonight on the 9 o'clock news this very night, Dane Placco did a 3.5-minute piece recorded 3.5 minutes. It probably ran over 4 minutes by the time everything was included, 4.5 or more.
Right.
And contrary to what that ignorant caller said, it focused on Richard M. Daley's Chicago Park District and alleged wrongdoing there, and it led to this very night, the number two guy in the Park District has been suspended.
Well, I come back, though, to resources. Resources. You can't do long-form stories like you used to, and you don't have the resources. Channel 5 doesn't have an investigative reporter any longer.
With that, we are going to collect some immediate news from Paula Cooper, and then a commercial or two, and back to the phones, 312-591-7200.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
And directly back to Dick Kay, to Lourdes Duarte, and to Mike Flannery, and back to your calls for them on 312-591-7200. And Bill has joined us. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Good show. Great guest. I had a question, Dick Kay. My father was in the Illinois legislature when you were down there, and it just seemed like when he had the utmost respect for you and the other people of the press crew. Is times changed where it's just a different breed of politician and press crew? Because it just seems like there's so much animosity either way nowadays.
I didn't really have any animosity with most of the legislators there. I covered them respectfully. To tell you the truth, we didn't get into much controversy with most of the average legislators there. I mean, I don't know how it is today. I haven't been there in 5 or 6 years. Mike is still going.
I
don't know if it's confrontational now or not, is it?
Well, I mean, on occasion it is. I don't think it's changed a lot, Dick. But, there are fewer people who cover it knowledgeably,
right,
and who know how decisions are made down there, who know how the dotted lines on the organizational chart really function. You know, that's unfortunate. There has never been a greater premium to be put on coverage of our state government when we've just raised the income tax by 67%.
Yeah.
And when despite the income tax going up, Judy Bartolpinka issued a report a few days ago saying that the amount of unpaid bills is still climbing.
There's a war between Madigan and Governor Quinn. You know who runs this state. It's Mike Madigan. It's certainly not Quinn. But a lot of, in television in particular, Mike's right. I don't know if anyone else covers it. A lot of the folks you used to see down there, even in my last days at Channel 5, I rarely went down, and I used to stay down there 3 or 4 days at a time.
Yes.
And they don't do it anymore. They won't put the resources into it. And their attitude is, we can cover it up here because we can get the reaction up here. And you can't.
Yeah.
You can't get those priceless sound bites. You can't get the Sam Vidalabean fight. Remember the senator who threw hot soup on Don Clark Netsch down there?
Yes.
Senator? I mean, seriously. I mean, the characters were down there. It was, the stories were priceless. Paul Powell's shoeboxes.
Well, but here's the reality. Here's the reality. We have metropolitan government.
Yeah.
In the Chicago area. City Hall is 200 miles south in Springfield.
Right.
And that is where the
grab
the metropolitan wide issues get played out, get resolved, get voted on and decided. They get decided down there.
Sir, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Very interesting.
I'm curious who his father was.
Too late. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, sorry about that.
312-591-7200 the number as we go next to Larry. Good evening.
Hi, good evening, guys. Nice to listen to you. I was in the car, and not sure if I had the wrong question. I was going to ask about if there's any way the city could get out of that terrible parking contract that we've got.
Yes, indeed. Well, I'd love for them to get out of it and undo it. There are some who've suggested that
we had two mayoral candidates, Carol Mosley-Braun and Gary
Miguel
Chico.
Miguel Del Valle also talked about
Miguel
it.
Miguel Del Valle, who suggested that there, you know, it might be worth a lawsuit. I mean, you can file a lawsuit against a ham sandwich. It's there's no guarantee you'll get a judgment, but
you have to pay the money back. I mean, if you get out of it, you're going to have to refund a lot of the money.
Yeah, the problem is it was over $1 billion, and we've spent it.
It's gone. Yeah.
So let's say we get out of the deal. Let's say we get out of it. Rahm doesn't have $1 billion.
Right.
He's got friends in Washington who might be able to supply some of it. We'll thank that caller, and we'll go quickly to another. 312-591-7200 is the number as we go to Bob, who's now reached us at WGN Radio. Good evening.
Good evening. Being a former resident of the 19th Ward and watching what's going on, and I think you just sort of touched it, but where is the political power going to be residing in the city of Chicago now? Where is that strength going to be, especially with the amount of aldermen that are changing? And who's going to be calling the shots, you know, under Ron?
Well, the floor leader in the city council is going to be Pat O'Connor.
Right.
You're going to have, the north side is in an ascendancy after
it is.
After more than half a century of south side mayors. The only non-south sider in 60 or 70 years was Jane Byrne.
Yeah.
And so the power is moving from the south side to the north side.
And I think Rahm Emanuel will still wield the power. But Ed Burke is still going to be chairman of the finance committee. You're going to see fewer committees. You're not going to see fewer aldermen, I don't think. That was an idea that was floated. But there are going to be fewer committees, and I think Rahm has already made that clear. And I think we've cut a deal with Burke already.
But we talked about Springfield, and it is so important. And the president of the state senate, who was a South Sider, Emil Jones,
right,
is now a North Sider.
Right.
Rahm's own state senator, John Cullerton. The Speaker of the House is still South Sider, Mike Madigan. But Springfield is hugely, hugely important, and Rahm is going to need a lot of favors out of there.
Well, I think he's already laid the groundwork for that. I mean, after all, Rahm starts talking about short or longer teacher days and changes to the teachers' contracts, et cetera.
But Mike Madigan and Tom Cross have they're talking about an appropriation that cuts $57 million from the city of Chicago's. It gives the city $57 million less in the fiscal year that starts July 1 than it gets right now. That's going to mean potentially teacher layoffs. So,
and with that, that's the question that I have is how is Rahm going to be dealing with Madigan? You know, is he going to continue to let Madigan have that stranglehold down there at the legislature?
I've got my fingers crossed. He is as close to John Cullerton as he is to anybody. So Cullerton is going to be Rahm's ace in the hole in Springfield. He's not that close to Madigan.
I think Madigan is going to continue to wield the power in Springfield. I think he's the guy who runs the state. And I think some of the legislation you're seeing now, proposed legislation you're seeing now, is Madigan asserting himself. I really believe that. I believe that Madigan wants Rahm to come to him. You got to go through me if you want to get anything done in Springfield. I don't think Madigan's going to go quietly.
That's rather like no man comes to the father but through the son.
There you go.
Or the daughter, because what's happening is Speaker Madigan has great ambitions for his daughter, Lisa.
Indeed he does.
She's the attorney general. And you know what? She's a woman of substantial accomplishments on her own. And in Springfield, there are those who refer to her as the governor in waiting.
Interesting bit of local news. That is local neighboring states. Just today, Mike Pence announced that he's running for governor of Indiana.
He's been on the radio here. He's been on competing stations talking to the morning crew. And, you know, it is a wide open field. I've never seen the Republican field as wide open as it is. For the last 30 or 40 years, it's pretty much been the next guy in line. This time, it's not going to be like that at all. I mean, that's how Bob Dole ended up as the nominee, He was the next guy in line. Republicans are, we could end up with a Barack Obama type surprise.
I think there will be. I really believe that the Republicans have pretty well dealt themselves a darn near fatal blow.
By virtue of what?
By virtue of attacks on labor.
Here comes the progressive who's on Saturday
afternoon.
It is. It's
afternoon. Attacks on labor in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Ohio, in Indiana. It's attacks on family planning. Indiana's passing is going to deny family planning money to Planned Parenthood. You're seeing in Wisconsin in particular the recall efforts, and it's really rolling up there. You saw organized labor come together. You woke a sleeping giant,
my opinion. Until Osama bin Laden was killed, the president's job approval rating was at 38 or 39%. I think that
a fill-in-the-blank
Republican has a shot.
As I noted, Dick Hay is sitting on my left where he belongs, and I'll give you a view from the right. Maybe that's a sleeping giant, the labor unions and so on. So is the Tea Party. Whatever you want to call it. And that's a sleeping giant aroused, which has tremendous consequences for national and also for more local politics.
Well,
at any rate, what has greatest import of all is the necessity for indeed supporting capitalism, which we now pause to do. But first, I should tell all listening that we've now got a number of lines available. If you've been trying to reach us, get in there quickly and make another try. 312-591-7200. 312-591-7200. For any questions or comments to Lourdes Duarte, to Mike Flannery, to Dick Kay, and we will be directly back after this.
Milt Rosenberg and Extension 720 on 720 WGN.
I note that Lourdes has been caught between two intense and passionate political reporters.
Yeah, this is what happened. I got stuck in the middle between two political reporters and the street murder reporter. There you go.
Do you find either of them more persuasive than the other?
They are both very, very persuasive. I'm not going to pick sides here. Don't make
opposite,
me do that.
Smart.
Staying right here nice and quiet as I listen to the two of them.
What's on your docket for coming days, or don't you know? Just in terms of stories.
Yeah, no, I won't know.
It's a new thing.
Yeah, it depends on what's happening day in, day out. I am working on a story for next week on radiation and the effects of Japan's nuclear plant and sort of, 2 months later, what is left here in Illinois and what we need to know. But that's for next week.
We go back to the phones. 312. Sorry, yes.
Mike and I, unlike the Democrats and Republicans and the Tea Party and the less conservative, we respect each other's opinion. I mean, we respect each other's work, and we respect each other's opinion. No matter how much we disagree, we are respectful. And
Dick Kay deserved every single award he ever got, and he deserved some that he didn't get.
But, I'm sure that's true.
But if we could have this kind of dialogue respectfully, the whole country would be better off. That's the progressive coming out.
It is worth noting, to also speak about the difference between various media, that you can have this kind of dialogue on a two-hour radio talk show, whether mine or yours, but you can't really have it on television, can you?
And that's why I like radio. That's why I like where I am.
Yeah.
3 hours.
We go back to the phones. 312-591-7200. And next up is Marty. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Just would like to hear the opinions of the reporters on the air, who the young, bright, new reporters are in Chicago TV.
Ah, the young, bright reporters on Chicago TV.
There are Lourdes Duarte, for example. That's one that I can name right. I never met her. I mean, right off the top of my head. Oh, my gosh. I think there are a lot of them. And I think we've got a lot to learn from people like Dick Kay and Mike Flannery. I mean, I can name so many at my station. Dan Ponce, one of them. Gaynor Hall, Jay Miller. There's a number of them. And
we're not new bright reporters.
Dan Ponce was my intern.
Was he your intern, really?
He's a very, very bright guy.
Very smart young man. We're really happy to have him.
He's going places.
Ben Bradley over at 7.
Yeah.
Bright reporter.
Mm-hmm. In my shop at Fox Chicago, I tell you, Tisha Lewis and
new
young reporter, and Darlene Hill, a woman who's been in the market for a while, but who really, really knows Chicago and who really, really knows the news business, won a Peabody Award for her coverage
right.
of that terrible shooting. The Darian Albert, the killing, not the shooting, he was actually beaten to death
right.
of Darian Albert and all the aftermath. And she won that national award and certainly deserved it. We have, we've got Patrick Elwood and Jan Jeffcoat and, my colleague Larry Yellen has done great work. I've already done a shout out
right.
for Dane Placco.
There
are a lot of good, talented, smart people in this market.
Well,
in addition to Lourdes Duarte.
I'll give you that paycheck later.
The caller asked about the new bright reporters. A lot of the folks we're talking about are people we really respect. I mean, Paul Meinke is one of the best street mm-hmm. reporters in the city of
and
Chicago.
And just a great storyteller
and
as well.
A great mm-hmm. storyteller. And did he ever give you any of his puns, any of his poetry?
He has not.
You got to ask him. And
the limericks.
Limericks.
Oh, okay.
That's what I was.
He's the best limerick.
He really is. But I think that you take a look at folks who are bright young reporters. There's Alex Perez over at Channel mm-hmm. 5, somebody who's been around quite a while who I respect is Marianne Ahern, the new political reporter at Channel 5.
She's very good.
Very
not
good.
Not so new. She's
no, that's
she's
what I said.
Couple,
not so
campaigns.
New. Lourdes is new. Mm-hmm. I never met her till tonight. Maybe I met her one time briefly. But she came to Chicago after.
While we're talking about people who've been around for a while and are great reporters, we cannot end the evening without mentioning somebody we all respect a great deal, namely Carol Marine.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Absolutely. And again, she has that longer format there at Channel 11, the evening show they do at 7 o'clock.
But she's back at 5 as well.
And at 5, mm-hmm. but often.
I mean, on Channel 5.
On Channel 5, but doesn't have as much time as over at the public broadcasting outlet. And I got to tell you, having moved from Channel 2 to Channel, to Fox Chicago News, I like having that 9 to 10 o'clock slot. And then in the morning, they go on at 4:30. There's 5.5 hours till 10 a.m. And then there's another hour at noon. I mean, so there's a lot to be said, Milt, for having people come in. One of the things we're doing at Fox Chicago is we try to bring people in from multiple sides of an issue and have a debate. Let's talk about what are some of the things government now does that we're spending money on that we can't afford anymore.
Lisa Parker is another one that at 5, just a great reporter. Does a lot of consumer reports, but a great reporter. You're in dangerous territory when you start naming names.
Let me name one name to you of a great reporter who's long since passed from the scene, Len O'Connor.
When I first came
to work at this radio station, he had ended his television career and had started doing radio at WGN.
Right.
And some of the first broadcasts I did had Len on as expert on Chicago and politics and more broadly on everything else. He sat with me and one or two other people the night of the Democratic primary when Jane Byrd won. And as it was going on, he pulled H.V. Kaltenborn. You remember Kaltenborn with regard to Truman? When Truman was expected to lose to Dewey, but won. And Kaltenborn kept saying through all that night, we haven't yet heard from the country districts. And Len O'Connor would say, we haven't yet heard from downstate. This is impossible. She can't possibly win. Don't be fooled by these early returns. And he sat there. By the time the program was over, he was stunned with the fact that she had already been declared the winner.
He wasn't the only one.
Yeah. I worked with him at Channel 5
Lovely
for years.
Man.
He was a wonderful old friend of mine. Yeah. I'll tell you a quick Len O'Connor story. I met him at the airport one time, and he was coming in, and I was coming in from I don't know where, maybe Springfield. And I went out to get a cab, and Len said, where are you headed, kid? That's the way he was.
He was.
I said, well, I'm going down to the station, Len. Well, come on with me. I'll give you a ride down there. Come on. And we get, cab pulls up, they got a cab for Len. There's a long line, but for Len O'Connor, they got a cab waiting. And Len said, hop in, And the cab driver said to him, he said, Mr. O'Connor, you're riding a cab? I'm surprised. I thought you would have a big black limousine.
Or be carried in a sedan chair.
And Lynn said, I never use a limousine. Sounded like W.C. Fields almost. He said, I never use a limousine. He said, the only time I want to ride in a limousine is when they haul me to the graveyard. And he said, and when we do that, I want them to have a full keg of Irish whiskey in it, and when the hearse returns, I want it to be empty. And I thought about that so many years. I was in Springfield, and they asked me to be a pallbearer for Lynn, and I couldn't. I was in Springfield, and I just regretted it so much. I just loved the guy.
Wonderful figure. Do we have time for one more very quick call? Here it is. Russ joins us. Good evening. No, he's just left us. So Jim joins us, and very quickly, please.
Well, the TV, I love this conversation. The radio conversation is perfect, and TV broadcasts have to be dumbed down because of the way they dumb down everything now. And you got to follow the money because they fired half of you and all that in TV land where you make the big money. So it's like just the company line comes out, and we realize you guys are brilliant. You know everything and all that, but your story gets packed between. How come they don't have a critical mass of the stories of corruption in Chicago? How come that never happens? And the other thing is when they had, like they gave 10 times as much attention to a tea party in St. Louis, Missouri that has 2,000 people as they do 100,000 people in the city of Chicago.
You pose very pertinent questions, but, sir, there is no time to answer them. However, to end with some note of grace, I will ask Lourdes Duarte to respond to you.
Whew. Well, let's see how we answer that question. I mean,
we don't have to really answer it.
That was a long one. I'm trying to think of an answer
for
him.
You've only got 30 seconds.
To have more resources, right?
I think there's not a whole lot of time. I think things are changing in news to where there's, for example, our station has a lot more ability to put on longer format stories where you can focus a little bit more on some of the details. So, I mean, I'm hoping that in the future, in the next few years, that perhaps that could be something that could be done.
I want to tell you about one of the strangest things on news television that I've ever seen. Have any of you seen it? RT, Russian television, Russian news television.
I have. You're absolutely right.
It's totally anti-American.
Exotic. And I was watching it recently, and an expert came on, an expert who predicted that within 10 years, the U.S. will break up into 5 countries.
Yeah, and stuff like that. All along, we're racist. The poor are eating rats in the alleys, et cetera, et cetera. It's all run by an evil cabal. You'd think that the Soviet Union had never fallen. You'd think that somehow Brezhnev was there.
I assume this is a Vladimir Putin project.
Well, obviously it is. We are truly out of time. Time only to thank Dick Kaye and Mike Flannery and Lourdes Duarte for joining us, and to tell you that we'll be back again for a full 2-hour program tomorrow night as we talk about, of all things, World War I and its consequences up to the very present moment. That's tomorrow at 10. Until then, thanks to all for listening, and a most cordial good night.